Hey guys, so here we are. We are again in Philippians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. And so we're going to go ahead and read it together right now. It says, "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you." Now, as we look at the topic here of whatever is admirable, we come into one really, really simple point. Whatever is admirable is something that is well reported of. Okay, so it's something that we look at and we go, that's a good thing. Hey, look, this is something that is admirable. It's something that I could look at and say, wow, that is something worthy of my respect. It's something that's worthy of being looked upon with favor, something that just makes me go, man, I really look at that. I think highly of it. And it's something that I would want to model myself, something, a characteristic or a idea or a good thing that's worthy of being followed after. You know, as I've grown up, the things that I admire have changed. And I'm sure this is true for you too. You know, as a kid, I always admired the police and officers and firemen. I really just loved the idea that people looked to them for protection, that they were people that others looked to and wanted to be like. And I thought to myself, man, when I grow up, I want to be the person that goes into that burning building and rescues people. I want to be the one that stands up and fights against the bad guys. You know, growing up in a military environment, I felt the same way about the Marines and the Seabees. I looked at them and they just seemed tougher than everybody else. They seemed like the guys that would be able to protect people, and they really inspired me. As a young person, as a young boy, my heart longed to be a protector. My heart longed to be somebody that was willing to fight for what was right. And so I looked at them and I admired them. Well, as I grew up and as I started getting a little older and I got introduced to sports, well, the people I admired changed even a little bit more, because I looked, and growing up, I realized the athletes were the people that people looked up to, that like all my friends wanted to be like these athletes. And, you know, not really growing up in a sports family, having been introduced to it by my then best friend Chad and his father, who was my little league coach, I started to watch football and basketball and hockey, and I started to be inspired by these people. I'd look and I'd see these no-look passes that Magic Johnson would do, and I'd just go, whoa, this guy, like, he's huge. He's 6'5", and he can be a point guard, or he can battle down inside near the hoop, and I was just in awe of him. Or I'd look at Joe Montana and the way that when the game was in the clutch, he always came through, that he had that perfect pass that you knew at the end of the game, if you needed to win, that Joe Montana was going to do it. I remember standing in awe of Wayne Gretzky and his ability. He was so smooth on the ice. He could move the puck so well and just move around people and put things where they needed to be. His precision when he shot the puck was just phenomenal. And so this guy who everybody's trying to hit is just dancing around them, moving. And so I admired those characteristics in them. I admired their ability to do these things. Just, it was a good report being able to say, did you see that pass that Magic Johnson made? You know, I've heard a lot lately of people being critical of professional athletes. And while I will grant that we probably need to pay people like our teachers more, and why we need to make sure that we're paying more for the medical providers, God gifted these people with attributes and talents. God made them and designed them so that they could skate the way that Wayne Gretzky skated, so that they could do these amazing passes like Magic Johnson did, you know, and so that you could look and see that God specifically designed Joe Montana to be able to have precision and skill at the things that he did. And there's nothing wrong with looking at those things and going, man, that's pretty good. You know, that's something that can inspire people to challenge themselves physically, to do things, to push themselves beyond where they naturally were. But, you know, as I got older, the things that I admired started to shift. While it was good for a time to admire those physical attributes, and they inspired me as a young man to be more active and to do the things that helped me to have some more confidence in my abilities, when I got to be an adult, things started to shift. And the people I admired weren't people who did grand things per se, but rather they were people who cared enough to put others first. You know, the starting place of that for me was as an 18-year-old young man working with my Uncle Tom. Now, I never understood why somebody who was such a gifted speaker, why somebody who had so much of a heart for God would spend his time preaching for a small congregation down in southeast Kansas with small numbers and in a small community that wouldn't allow for him to be able to expand upon or to grow into a larger congregation. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me as a young man. I thought, well, surely God has gifted him to be this great speaker, to be this great teacher, to be someone to reveal Christ to people. How on earth did he end up in this small congregation? And I asked my uncle, and he said, well, John, you know, there were opportunities. He had larger congregations that had come to him, especially as a young man, and said, look, you can do this. We want you to come be our preacher. We want you to come work for us in this larger congregation. And my uncle passed up that opportunity. And the reason he passed it up is because he understood that even though there were larger opportunities out there for him, that the thing that was most important was that these people in this small town in southeast Kansas needed someone to preach, needed someone to teach, needed someone to prepare them in the Word. And I can tell you that from knowing the members of his congregation, they know the Word of God and they are passionate about God. And even though it is small and has been small for a long time, the gauge of what I saw in my uncle was a heart of service. He didn't care about the numbers. He cared about being faithful where he was. And then I was inspired by people like Mother Teresa, who was willing to go into leper colonies, to go into a place where she could have become infected, and to love on these people, to hug them, to hold them, to care for them. She was willing to step into something that could have cost her her limbs, that could have cost her her life, and to love them. I became inspired by men like C.S. Lewis, who, while he grew up in a very difficult situation, having lost his mother at a very, very young age, and having become embittered towards God for the loss of his mother, so much so that as a young man, he accepted atheism. He believed that there was no God. But he was willing to study the Word with guys like J.R.R. Tolkien and other Christian writers who he would collaborate with, and how he was willing to be honest with himself. It wasn't that he truly believed that there was no God. It was that he was angry at God for the losses that he experienced. And so he studied and came to understand the nature of God and the love of God. And he became one of the most prolific Christian writers of all time. I look at people like Francis of Assisi, they call him Saint Francis of Assisi, who had grown up in this very decadent life. He was the son of a rich merchantman, and he had everything at his disposal. He lived a life of great affluence. He was basically the Paris Hilton of his time. He had the ability to go to all of these parties. He was living in this drunken revelry, and all of a sudden, something clicked inside of him, and he felt the emptiness that was his life. And having found Christ, he realized that things needed to change. Just like Zacchaeus, he looked at his life and he said, man, I don't want to be this rich, decadent person. I don't want to be so completely focused on things and possessions and to lose my immortal soul. And so Saint Francis began selling all of the things that he had. He began giving away his possessions, so much so that his father became frustrated. You know, his father looked and said, look, Francis, I like the change in you, that you're taking life seriously, but this is getting ridiculous. You're selling everything that I've given you, and if you don't stop, I'm going to disown you. Francis, at that point, looked at his life and said, you know what? I don't care. And he sold off the remainder of what he had and began to live a life of poverty, begging, not for his own sustenance, but begging so that he could provide for the needs of the poor that were around him. And so the Catholic Church rallied around Francis, and he had his own order of monks. And these people would receive funds from the Catholic Church, and they would go and they would gather whatever they could, keeping none of it, and giving everything away to the poor to provide for the needs of those that were around them. And I could go on and on about these good things that I see. I could go on and on about these things that are of good report and how those things impacted me as an individual. The thing is that when I step back and I look at what I admire about people like my uncle, about people like Mother Teresa, C.S. Lewis, and about Saint Francis, as I look at those things, I realize that finding admiration for others came from finding the admirable in faith. See, I had to learn to find the admirable in faith. Faith is something that is truly of good report. And the preacher in Hebrews understood that. He recognized and he said, you know, my brothers and sisters are struggling. My fellow Hebrews are starting to think maybe this faith is not what it was cut out to be. Maybe this faith isn't what it was, what they thought. They expected this great kingdom with peace and being loved. Now that they're having conflict with their fellow Hebrews, they're starting to look and say, is it really worth it to live this life? Is this faith, is this Christian faith really of good report? And so the writer of Hebrews, the preacher, comes through and he starts talking about Abel's sacrifice. He talks about how Enoch walked so faithfully with God that God took him up into heaven. He talks about the faith of Noah, how it didn't make sense for Noah to build the ark because no one had ever seen a flood before. And yet he did it anyways. It talks about Abraham's trust that when God said his descendants would inherit, that they would. And it talks about how his belief was so strong that even though God asked him to sacrifice Isaac, the son of promise, the one that this all was supposed to come about through, that he did it. He talks about Sarah and her faith. He goes on and on and on, talking about these heroes of faith, these people who, even though things looked dire, trusted in the good report of God. And what was that good report? That an inheritance was coming. That good things were coming. And even though they didn't see them at that moment, they trusted in this good report that God would give them the things that they needed. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that something that we should be looking to? Is the good report that we get through God? And so in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, it says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." You know, many of us are just in a place where we're fed up with everything that's going on. Some of us think that this coronavirus thing has blown up, and so we're ready to get back out. We're ready to go and do things. We're ready to just be in the life that we were in before, and so that frustration builds. Some of us are looking more cautiously and saying, you know what? I know people that have died. Like, I've seen people that are extremely sick. I personally know of people who were in the hospital for 30 days with this virus. I personally know someone that spent 4 days in ICU over this thing. And so there are people who are looking and are saying, like, man, this thing is serious. And what it's doing to people is serious. And so we look and we're like, man, it's easy to become weary. It's easy to become discouraged. But here's the beauty, is that whichever side of the fence you're on, Christ is there with you. He is the perfecter of faith. And so our third point, our greatest admiration is for the Lord. Our greatest admiration is for the Lord, because no matter what else we look at, we see a good report in him. We see that even in the midst of all of this chaos, we can still live a life that is worthy of being reported well. Jesus grew up in hard times. Okay? Jesus grew up in a time where the Romans were severely oppressing the Jewish people. When Jesus came into the world, he didn't come in as a great and mighty king that people would admire him. He came into this world in the small town of Nazareth. He came to a poor family that couldn't even afford the lamb for his purification when he was born. He grew up the son of a carpenter who was very likely forced to work in Sephora, the capital of Galilee, forced to work on these pagan buildings to serve. He grew up in a time where everything was oppression, where the people were crying out to the Lord for freedom from the bondage from the Roman Empire, where zealots were doing everything that they could to fight. And Jesus came into this world and began to live an admirable life. He cared for the sick and the oppressed. He went to those who were lost in sin and invited them back to the Father. He lived his life in such a way that people couldn't help but be inspired by him. And in doing that, he faced great criticism. for doing good, for living out the greatest commands of loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and for living out loving your neighbor as yourself, he was criticized. He was mistreated. And he would be sent to the cross to die. Brothers and sisters, in these times of difficulty, we need to think about whatever is admirable. We need to look at the cloud of witnesses around us. I want you to think about this. You have a cloud of witnesses. Jesus was the perfect example of living a selfless life, which is a life that is worthy of good report. And brothers and sisters, while you and I, we don't do it perfectly, I see selfless life in all of you. I see how you guys are caring for each other in these difficult times. I see how you all are stepping up and how you all are being brave to selflessly care for each other, calling each other, helping each other with your physical needs. I see all of that happening. Look at all of the things that are good that are going around you and focus on them. Let that good report inspire you. Just as the good report of those who were faithful witnesses, who trusted in Jesus Christ, trusted in God's promises, have set the example and the pattern for us. Focus on the good report that we can find in Jesus Christ. Let those things inspire you during this time of difficulty so that whether you're frustrated that you're stuck at home, whether you're concerned about what's going on with this and the risks that it's causing to the elderly and those who have immuno issues, wherever you are, if you focus on the things that are of good report, if you focus on doing good during these times, you're going to find blessing. Okay? So that's our topic for the week. We will break up into our groups and have some discussion on it.